time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. I am Bob Surratt.
I'm Marianne Murciano. Happy Wednesday.
Coming up in this hour, we'll get to the business of social media and new evidence that kids plus social media may equal trouble. Stay tuned for that. And the secrets of one of the hottest restaurateurs in Chicago. But first, Terry Savage, and it's terrysavage.com for all the financial news you can use. Why don't we talk about what's going to happen at 1 o'clock Chicago time with the Fed first, Terry?
Within an hour, we're going to be hearing what the Fed has to say, and the expectation is the Fed won't have much to say because the Fed, Janet Yellen, created this precedent, I'm going to call it a rule, that unless they schedule an official press conference after their meeting, there won't be an announcement, and there is no official press conference scheduled. Now, they'll issue a statement, and all the market gurus will sit there comparing last month's statement with this month's statement about how they see the economy.
So this is just a monthly
statement. So this is not a meeting at which anything's expected to happen. However, there are three meetings this fall, September, October, and December. And at those meetings, the Fed chairman has practically promised that rates will go up in September. The futures markets aren't seeing it that way, but how can you fight the Fed? That's the first rule of investing. Don't fight the Fed. They're predicting that the Fed will see so much economic weakness that they won't be prepared to raise rates in September. That will destroy some credibility. And there are others who are saying not only will you get a rate increase in September, but you'll get another quarter point in October, and you might get another one going into the Christmas shopping season in December. So the Wall Street is just in a frenzy, and of course the market's now up about 100 points, expecting that no change will be made, but that they won't delay their timetable.
Is this something that can really be so unplanned? I mean, or does someone know what is going to happen? Because September is very soon. I mean, September is in a month.
Yeah, it's right after everybody comes back from vacation. So there'll be a lot of the last 2 weeks of the summer are usually quiet. All the hedge fund managers go on vacation. That's when crazy things happen. So we'll keep our eyes on that. No one knows. The Fed has to vote on it. Things could happen. We could get reports. We've gotten mixed reports, for instance, on housing. The first reports out were that housing purchases of new homes were terrific, and then existing homes, well, that wasn't as good as expected. Home prices were up about 5% that year over year. They expected more. What we're seeing now is more positive news. But somehow consumer confidence is far weaker. Yesterday was reported out down about 10 points. So there's mixed news. And what happens if the Fed raises rates and the economy really isn't strong enough to take it?
It'll
number one, it should probably hit the stock market negatively, and that will rebound through the economy. People will get worried. Second of all, it will be an excuse to raise mortgage rates, so that will slow the housing market. Third of all, it will attract money from all around the world, which may or may not go into the stock market, so that's a plus and a minus. And in general, it could slow the economy if it's not strong enough to take this rate increase, and that's what the Fed's sitting there discussing.
So is there someone who knows if the economy is strong enough to take it? Who knows?
No. God.
Okay. You know, so you don't know it until you try it? Or, I mean, it's got to be, mathematical.
No. That's the problem. We give this great power to the Federal Reserve and to the governors who vote, And some of them have predilections that they've been on the side of let's raise interest rates, the economy's strong, and others have said, no, our own Charles Evans of the Fed in Chicago says, no, you don't want to raise rates yet. I mean, is known as saying that. He's kind of what's considered a dove. And these are human people. This is an unelected group of eight or so people that are going to vote on something critical to the economy. The markets know what they believe, and the latest Fed survey shows that a majority think that of the economists are looking for a September rate hike, but the financial futures, where money puts its mouth, are really pointing to the first move in December. That's what makes it so much fun.
Whatever happened to that story that we heard a few weeks ago that there was a hint that maybe now, since she had mentioned spring, that it might not happen until March of 2016. Whatever happened with that?
Well, you know,
That was a big story.
I know. Things change. The news changes. The results, the economic reports. Most people thought that existing home sales would be up. Home prices are higher, but not as high as had been expected. Consumer confidence, surprisingly, were they worried about last month's survey? Were they worried about China? What were people worried about? Were we worried about the Iran nuclear deal? Is that what impacted it? Or is it financial expectations about jobs? We have low number of job openings right now. The labor market is, quote, getting tight, as the economists say. I mean, things look okay. You're not hearing a lot of people in your neighborhood talking about, I'm afraid to quit and get a better job, or I'm worried about being laid off. That kind of talk is from a few years ago. So the truth is, really, the savage truth of all of this is, nobody knows. It's a very uncertain game. The Fed has a huge responsibility. If they raise rates and risk slowing the economy, they could be blamed like crazy. If they don't raise rates and the economy picks up steam, they're going to wonder why people are going to second guess them. Why didn't they move? But in September.
What about China? I thought that once we stopped hearing about Greece and started hearing more about China, that maybe that would lead to the Fed not raising rates this year.
When it comes to our rates, those are really sideshows. The Greek situation is a Eurocentric situation. Greece is basically toast, but it suits the Euro land to keep them in the Euro, to keep the currency weak, to let the Germans export. The banks have figured it out, it's not that it's not a significant problem, but it's not going to impact us too much. China's interesting. You know, the Chinese stock market is still up, I think it's about 70% this year. It just crashed about 30%. It's rebounded today, but crashed from its highs about 28% to 30%. China doesn't know about free markets. They ran right in there and they threw money at the brokers and said buy stocks. They stopped trading. China's going to have to learn what it is to be a free market economy. So all eyes are on the dollar. It's not like we don't have problems. In a different era, we would be pointing to, oh, my gosh, look at our deficits. Look at our promises for Medicare. Look at the Social Security disability trust funds running out of money in the next year. But nobody's paying attention to that because we're the least worst place in the world to put your money.
Terry Savage, and there's more after a break. We'll talk a little bit more about the Fed, the market, and we'll get back to the real estate business, too. Continuing with Terry Savage, author of the book The Savage Truth on Money. One more thing about the Fed. The September rate hike that people think is going to happen, is that already priced into much of the market at this point?
Some of the market, but not some of the market. That, because of all this uncertainty, usually things that you kind of believe are going to happen are priced in. Some of it's priced in, and actually it'll be a bigger kind of a market impact if they don't raise rates in September. But there's still a lot of skepticism that it won't happen until later in the year, so it's not all priced in.
I have a question for you from a listener. What are you thinking about in terms of tax lien investments these days?
I deal with all of you regular, ordinary people who have a wide variety of choices of ways to diversify your money safely. And there are also a bunch of stuff around that people run around trying to sell, and they're selling it to you because they make huge commissions. So if you want esoteric kind of stuff like that, it's buyer beware. I want to tell you to save your money, spend less than you make, invest in a diversified way across ETFs, exchange-traded funds, mutual funds, diversify your investments. I'm not leading on a bunch of people I don't know into the wilderness of some of these very exotic commercial mortgage packages and stuff like that. You won't get that from me.
And as you point out on TerrySavage.com, your home is your residence, not a trading investment. You do have some things to consider regarding home ownership. Go down the list of a few of these.
A column just posted today. But the news today, or actually it was yesterday, is home ownership in America is down. The percentage of people that own homes is down back to where it was in the 1960s. We have a whole couple of generations, the millennials and Gen X, that looked around and saw what happened in the last 7 years and are going, heck no, I'm not buying a house. Everybody gets, ruined.
Also, they may not have the money to do it.
Well, and they may not have the money and they have student loans. But for a lot of reasons, people aren't buying homes now. And we saw some good news, as I mentioned earlier, about housing, but not great news about new home sales and so forth. What I'm trying to say is that what you've learned in the last 5 years about housing is wrong, because we're not going to have that kind of a crash again because the banks got smart and the regulations are different. So if you buy a home, just remember a couple quick things. First of all, it's your residence. It's not a speculation or an investment. And when you figure out what your net worth is, don't include that that your house went up $10,000 from when you bought it. It's not that kind of a thing. It's a roof over your head.
Well, yeah, and also you don't have it until you sell it.
Well, of course, with every investment, right, you don't lock in the profits. But the point is, your house is a place of shelter for your family. It gets you some tax deductions. You hope the value will grow. You know prices can go down. If you're going to be in the neighborhood or in the area for 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years, buy a home. Second of all, it's not liquid. You learned that, too. So don't think you can sell it just because you need the money. And you know how dangerous it is to take money out by getting a second mortgage or a home equity loan. So don't look at your house as your piggy bank. But do, if you're going to go out shopping, don't get overwhelmed by, oh, my God, I saw it. I want it. What a marvelous kitchen. Go to a bank or a lender, Quicken Loans, whatever you want to do, and find out what you're qualified to get in a mortgage so you aren't going, oh, well, we could bid 425 when you're only told you're good for a mortgage for $350,000.
Unless, right,
you know, your parents are going to give you money.
So pre-check your qualification.
Pre-check your qualification, and don't get caught in the middle. Don't buy the next home before you sell the first home, because if sales slow down or if interest rates go up, you could, assuming you had enough money for a down payment on the second house, you could get caught in the middle. Or you could put a qualification in your second purchase that until you sell your first home, and you could lose a security deposit. That used to happen. So understand how to buy a home, what it represents. I think that people will be piling in once more at the top. Here we have low interest rates. Sure, they're up from 3%. Hey, people I know bought homes with 12% mortgages, and they refinanced them but paid them off. This is relatively a good time, relatively low prices, relatively low mortgage rates. And don't overlook this as a cornerstone of financial security.
I think I've made every single one of the mistakes that you just talked about. Okay,
you know,
the
most expensive words in home, you know, I'm addicted to HGTV. I just love that flip or flop or love it or leave it or whatever it is.
Yeah, I love it.
And they're always coming in and they're always doing this project and they're always saying, yes, I'll get it done for you in 6 weeks and here's your budget and maybe we'll go 2% over your budget or you have to choose a different tile. Do not walk in thinking, okay, for only $15,000, we could totally redo this. The three most expensive words are as long as we're doing the tile in the kitchen and the tile guy's here, we should redo the bathroom.
Exactly. All right, you want to leave with some feel good comment from a listener?
This is a text.
For Terry, yeah. I saw Terry Savage last night at AARP Financial Presentation.
It was out in Arlington Heights.
Arlington Heights. She was fabulous, in all caps. She looks just amazing. What a Chicago treasure. What a Chicago gem. Thanks. Cheers, Jill.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you very much. And if you go to terrysavage.com, I'm doing it again August 11th up in, I think it's North Chicago. AARP put this on. So thank you all for coming last night. I have almost 600 people there.
That's awesome.
And they all, by the way, give you one back. They all say they listen to me here. That's why
awesome.
They vote you. And that they love the show at noon, the noon.
We love that.
Well, attention, Jill and everybody else. Some more Terry Savage here next Wednesday. Thank you,
thanks,
always, Terry.
Thank you.
Let's get to the hashtags, likes, and shares for today. Scott Kleinberg, who writes the So Social column in the Tribune. And the other day, a column about tips to be better on Twitter. And you mentioned, Scott, you did it for Facebook and you were going to do it for Twitter. And what I found most interesting was your tip about, let me read this. If you're going to tweet without responding, don't bother tweeting. It's all about engagement, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, a lot of people took that actual quote from the column and tweeted it. So I guess that's a good sign. But yeah, there's just a lot of people that just think, well, you know, I'm going to jump on, I'm going to say a whole bunch of stuff, and that's all I'm going to say, and I'm never going to go back. And, you know, to me, it's the same thing as if you guys would, you know, come on and talk but never listen to what anybody had to say. You would never do that. And the same thing applies on Twitter.
Good
and all
point.
Social media.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I try to be engaged with people who are tweeting.
Yep.
And a lot of times I'm not even seeing, maybe it's who I follow, but I'm following a lot of organizations, so I'm not seeing people I can even have a conversation with.
And I think organizations or I think businesses, you know, I think they can do the same thing. I think there are different rules that apply, you know, but you can show a human side and you can show that you're listening to your customers or whoever the, you know, whatever the situation is.
Good advice. Let's talk
about this horrific, horrific story that everybody's talking about with Cecil
the lion. Yeah.
This is just horrible. What are people saying online?
It's just incredible anger. I mean, you see a few people every now and then saying, you know, hunting is a way of life and it's allowed, but I've never seen such anger, such just overall anger. And, you know, they're all uniting around this hashtag, Cecil the Lion. And every time you look, it's the top of every trending list nationally, internationally, by state, by, it doesn't matter.
So that's the hashtag, Cecil the Lion.
Cecil the Lion is
the definite one. People are just angry at the dentist from Minnesota.
Yep.
What are they saying? I mean, are they... This is horrible. There are no words.
Yeah, and that's just it. It's just people being angry and people just seemingly shocked about the fact that he's a dentist, which I don't think that has anything to do with it. But people kind of, you know, saying, you know, I paid all this money to this dentist and he spent $50,000 to go out on this hunt. You know, it's like people looking in the rearview mirror and saying they wish they knew and they wish they could have done something to make it so it didn't happen. They really can't, but, you know, there's all kinds of things where the dentist has a Yelp page and all these people went to the Yelp page and left these terrible negative reviews with these just harsh words. And, I mean, you know, it's, you know, whether it's called for or not, you know, it's just trending on every platform that there is.
Many times with animals, we are more emotional than even when there are stories about people suffering.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think what the thing is about this lion is, you know, a beloved lion in Zimbabwe and part of a study, you know, it's like one of these, you know, just iconic type of things. And, you know, if you're not plugged into it before, you're certainly plugged into it now. And it's the whole hunting and the entire issue just kind of all in one place.
Let's talk about this new study about kids and social media. What do we learn from this?
It basically says that kids who are on social media more than 2 hours a day should be looked at for possible mental health issues. It's a study that came out of Canada.
What?
Just that there's that too much social media can lead to mental health issues down the road.
Are you talking about 15-year-olds like ours and all of her friends who are constantly posting on Snapchat and checking their Instagram? I mean, I don't know any of her, her friends who are not doing this.
Yeah, that's just it. It's so grade 7 through 12 here. So, yeah, we're talking about, you know, regular teenagers and older teens. But, you know, I think what they're trying to say here is, I don't know if they said it in the right way, I think what they're trying to say is that parents should be watching kids when they're spending all their time online. I guess like any internet disorder or anything like that. But it's a normal way of life, as you're saying. So, you know, I don't know that kids are in danger. Right. Right. But I think there are things that you can certainly do online. Everybody knows that. There are certain things you can do online that are dangerous and parents should watch out for. But this, I think, is saying, you know, constant immersion into the social media world is something to watch out for. But it is all the things you're talking about, Snapchat, Instagram, and all the popular platforms.
Yeah, this study looked at 750 students in grades 7 through 12.
Right, exactly.
There is a new search feature on Google. Do you like this, Scott?
You know, it's actually kind of cool. I have to use it more to really understand if it's useful, and it's going to only depend on the data that there is, but it basically is saying that it'll tell you based on people going to a business whether or not that business is likely to be busy at a certain time. So you could technically say the Starbucks across the street is going to be busy between 8 and 10 because that's what previous data show. I think is cool.
Yeah, people will use that.
I mean, why should I go out and look at the line? I mean, I can see it out the window, but I can just Google it. So I think I'm better off doing it that way.
Wow. Okay. When I heard this story a couple of days ago about Twitter cracking down on jokes, I could not believe it, because how could they even keep track of jokes?
They say that they can keep track of things based on people reporting it. But therein lies a problem in social media in general. People report that are not necessarily true. I mean, you don't necessarily know that a joke belongs to someone else, and they have to look it up and they have to prove that kind of thing, which is kind of a crazy thing. But then it comes into this whole story about this person who's suing Conan O'Brien, who's saying that he's taking jokes off Twitter, and that's a totally separate thing, but it goes to show how people are aware of the fact that there are people who are using social media to look for jokes and do things like that. But, I mean, I can't imagine being part of the Twitter department that's in charge of going through every single one of these reports. There's probably thousands of them.
I want to work in the joke department at Twitter.
The joke department.
Really? Yeah.
More in the So Social column of the Tribune. As always, thank you, Scott Kleinberg.
Thank you both.
Let's see if we can get some secrets of the restaurant business now. It's David Flom, who, with Chicago Cut, established one of Chicago's great steakhouses not too long ago. And then not too long ago, Kiefer's was purchased by the Chicago Cut owners and converted to See Chicago, getting rave reviews. It's been described as a steakhouse with gills. And, David, I don't know if you go with that description, but everybody seems to be raving about the seafood at the new place.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for having me here.
So what makes it different from all the other seafood places? Because, really, normally I'm used to hearing people raving about steakhouses, but not raving about seafood houses.
Well, I don't think there's one of us that hasn't seen our doctor and heard the doctor say to you, hey, how about giving steak a break and maybe incorporating some fish into your diet? So we thought about that, and we decided something that we wanted to do.
I was thinking about you coming in today, David, because I drove down around Well Street there and passed Gene and Giorgetti's and saw the sign since 1941. And I'm thinking, when you start a restaurant like Chicago Cut and now See Chicago, do you envision that kind of life for your place and an institution?
It's crazy when you look back at places like Gene and Giorgetti's or even Gibson's, who celebrated their 30th anniversary. Steve Lombardo was at Chicago Cut last night, and you want to hug that guy, because making it to 30 years, or Gene and Giorgetti making it, 75 years, and now they just opened their second restaurant. I mean, that's crazy amazing. And the fact that they have that much energy and tenacity, and they've wowed customers for so many years, really a huge accomplishment on their part. So we're at five. We've got quite some ways
to go.
That's
pretty good in the restaurant business. That's pretty good in the restaurant business. Why so many steakhouses and so many great steakhouses making it in our town?
You know, I think it's just the style of cuisine that we like. I mean, if we went to New Orleans and we said, how many Cajun restaurants are there? There's hundreds of them, and steak is definitely Chicago's home. There's no question about it. So I think sometimes people say, oh, well, how could another one open? Well, if you look what's on the plates at people's homes these days, when I walk through a grocery store, I see people lined up at the meat case. I don't necessarily see them other places.
And the fish case now.
Now we're right. Going to fish. So we see so many of our customers coming in and going, gosh, I'm really trying to add an element of health to my life. And it's challenging for every one of us. And so we wanted to open a fish restaurant where you could go and you could be 100% healthy and still have a nice meal out. That's pretty hard to do.
That is hard to do.
No matter where you go. And so we hired a chef, a guy named Bill Montaigne, who came from a restaurant called Le Bernardin in New York. It's Michelin Guide's number one restaurant in America for the last 15 years. He's got a great pedigree of fish.
And did he create new dishes? I mean, what, like?
He did. So he's really, really creative. He's really great in not only finding ingredients that you can't find at a grocery store, and he's also good at integrating ingredients together. So things that you'd necessarily wouldn't think go together, but then all of a sudden you taste them and you're like, wow, that's super cool and that's wonderful. So he's good like that. And then the other thing that was really important to us was about how fresh is the fish. We know we have the greatest airport in the world, so there shouldn't be a problem to get fish here timely unless we have one of our normal rainstorms in the summer or snowstorms in the winter.
Yeah.
So we bring our fish in less than 24 hours out of the water. That's pretty unique to Chicago, and we try and get it here as fast as we can so that that freshness prevails. There's nothing better, you know, for us that live in the Midwest when we go to one of the coasts and we say, oh, I ate lobster right out of the ocean, or I was in San Francisco and they pulled the crab right out. I mean, that's phenomenal. So we're trying to get closer to that experience here in Chicago.
You've been doing this for a long time. You were at Rosebud Steakhouse, Gabriel's. Along the way, what did you learn about the business? What did you find out that surprised you?
I think the underlying secret of our business is people, meaning that people go to a lot of restaurants because of the people that work there, the people that are at the door and greet them, the people that serve them. And so it's really important to embrace those special people that take care of our customers when they're in the restaurant. As I go to other states, I see other restaurants where, yeah, it's a positive experience, but there wasn't a memorable person there. And then I walk into a restaurant that has an amazing maitre d' who's super friendly and super nice. Where you're from, let me recommend this place to go to tomorrow night or whatever it might be. And that's special when you get mm-hmm. that. We have Midwestern warmth. I moved away from Chicago once to San Francisco, and it was instantaneous. I knew I wanted to move back because I missed that Midwestern warmth.
Yeah, that there's nothing like that. How do you get the word out about your restaurant? Because one day I just started hearing about you, and then immediately I needed to go to Chicago Cut. I mean, how do you get that word out?
Well, the best marketing in the world is through customers' word of mouth. And so, if you go to a restaurant, you don't meet anyone special, and the server takes care of you, that's fine. You may go home and tell your friends that you had a nice experience there. But if you have a memorable experience where you got to go back soon, then you start telling people. And so the National Restaurant Association has done studies on this. Positive experiences means that the average person is going to tell seven of their friends. If you start using that multiplier factor, then you're going to get to a pretty big client base fairly quickly. So we really try and touch our customers. We try and share, you know, encourage our managers and servers to be that personal touch and come back and ask for me. I'm, you know, Todd the server, and I'm going to treat you better than anyone in this whole town.
We constantly read about celebrities who are at Chicago Cut or now see, and how important is that to you and as a business?
Celebrities are obviously fun to have around, and they're real people, and it's cool to meet them. I mean, the great thing about a lot of them is that they're just normal people like you and I. And it's fun for people who don't get to see them, get to come in and touch them and take a picture with them and meet them and the whole thing like that. But, you know, at the same point, what's truly important to us are what we call our local celebrities, the people that live in Chicago that dine at our restaurants every week.
Any presidential visits in the forecast?
Oh, I mean, obviously we're
going to know about it like an hour before, right?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of candidates. There's no question about that.
That's true.
It's David Flom, Chicago Cut, and now See Chicago, see the letter C. Very clever on Kinsey. Thanks, as always, David. And if you'd like to hang around during the news, I have a leftover tuna salad sandwich from Manny's. So
good.
Help
I'm glad
yourself.
You're staying healthy.
Knock yourself out. Continued good luck to you.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. David.